Hey, everybody. This is Steve Kim. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. I'm here, as usual, with Chris Battle and Andy Steiger.
Hello.
Present.
We're all here. So, Scientology.
Scientology.
Scientology. So,
or I like to call science fictionism.
Science fictionism.
Zing.
Zing.
All right. So,
seriously, I think that's actually a helpful way to think about it. If you think of Scientology, I often think the Church of Science or something like that.
Yeah. It's not quite what you think it is it? It doesn't.
No, but if you go with, you know, science fictionism, then you'll always be on the right track.
Mm. Interestingly enough, the creator of Scientology was a science fiction writer.
Mm-hmm. What's his name?
L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard, okay.
And he is responsible for writing a story that turned into the worst movie in the history of movies.
I had no idea it's a movie.
They came up with a movie.
Was it his book Dianactics?
No. This was an actual science fiction movie. And the movie involved John Travolta and Barry Pepper.
Well,
because John Travolta is a Scientologist.
I mean, need you ask whether or not it's going to be a good movie at that point? I mean,
it's unbelievably bad. To be honest, I can't even remember what it's called right now. If you're interested in seeing a bad movie, just look up L. Ron Hubbard movie. But I remember watching it going, I can't even believe how bad this is. But it was like a train wreck. I couldn't look away.
Right? Yeah, the worst movie I ever saw was Kazam with
Shaq.
Shaq, yeah, that was
that
the
was
worst.
Pretty bad.
I hated myself for a couple weeks after that.
But at least with Shaq, though, you're going in with eyes wide open in a sense, because you're like, there's no way this is going to be good, right? But you go into a movie with I don't mind John Travolta, and I like Barry Pepper as an actor. And I like science fiction movies. So I was like, how could this be bad? But was it bad?
Right.
It was silly. And I mean, not to mock Scientology too much, but yeah, anyway, that you're a creator, folks.
So speaking of Scientology, then what do we know about Scientology? I mean, I think for most people, all that we know about Scientology is things like, well, Tom Cruise or John Travolta belonging to the Church of Scientology.
Well, it's been in the news lately.
Recently, yeah.
As well.
It's
been kind of interesting why actually it's been in the news.
Yeah, it's actually, there is a one of their adherents, for a lifelong adherent actually, she grew up in the church in a compound in Florida. Actually, her name is Leah Remini from King of Queens fame.
That was a great TV show, by the way.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Kevin James has got his own style of humor that I appreciate.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. And anyway, Leah Remini has recently decided to leave the church for reasons. Basically, she says that it was taking away from her family, and she was having sort of flashbacks of her own childhood and her mom always going off and spending time at the church. And she decided that she did not want to have the same for her daughter. So she left.
And now, it sounded also, there's a little bit more to it, a little bit of mystery that's been going on with it. Mm-hmm. And that is that the main guy currently, the Pope, if you will,
of the Church of Scientology.
Is, what is it? His name, David, Miscarriage or, anyway, I'll find that. At any rate, she was good friends with his wife, and David Miscarriage, and he was at she was at a wedding apparently, Tom Cruise's wedding, and she was not present. And she asked where she was, and I'm forgetting what her name is, David's wife, but nobody's seen her since then. And so she recently put a missing report into LAPD.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I hadn't
with
heard
regards
that.
To where she is, and that's when the whole firestorm started. And still nobody's heard from her. So it's an interesting mystery.
I like mysteries. I don't like the idea of somebody being harmed, but I like a good mystery. Sherlock Holmes.
So yeah, so that's what got this whole thing started, but you're right. That was also, I mean, this what you were saying had been brewing.
The storm
was on the horizon.
So there's a lot of misgivings, if you will, in the media right now over Scientology. And Scientology, the church itself, is actually shooting back at Leah Remini now. And their spokesman is saying that she's just crying out for publicity and she's a glory hound and what have you. But because she's not only calling into question Scientology, but she's also attacking Tom Cruise in the media.
Hmm.
And that evidently is, it's almost like, have you ever seen Braveheart when they talk about attack against the king, is it, or attack against the king's soldiers is the same as attack against the king himself.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so they're talking about it, which is biblical, right? For why are you persecuting me, Saul? See what I'm saying?
I'm here with you.
All right.
Profound.
I know. This is like Inception. There's layers of theology going on. But yeah, so there, by her attacking Scientology, she's attacking Tom Cruise, but then she's openly naming him too. And this is disturbing for them. So they're firing salvos back across her bow and whatnot.
Yeah, so, interesting. So there's this firestorm back and forth. But I think it would be helpful if listeners just understood a little bit more about Scientology, science fictionism.
Because it's easy for people to get caught up in that, well, if somebody like Tom Cruise believes it, well, it's got to be credible.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's a nice guy, makes good movies. And
yeah. It definitely gives that sort of credibility to it.
Yeah.
Just like when Mitt Romney was running for presidency, all of a sudden.
Wow.
You know, Mormonism gets a lot of press and credibility to go along with it.
Right. I mean, we've talked about this before. Interestingly enough, there's a number of similarities between Mormonism and Scientology. Both of them believe that they were originally gods.
Interesting.
This science fictionism, Scientology. Mm-hmm. Hubbard, pretty much, he was a writer and came up with a book that was really popular called Dianactics.
Mm-hmm. Dianetics.
Dianetics. Thank you. Dianetics. And sold lots of copies. Mm. And, you know, not too long after that, Scientology really was born out of that book.
Right.
And it's interesting because when you start hearing what Scientology believes, it sounds like science fiction. Clearly, somebody has created a story. And so the story is that there were trillions of years ago, there are a lot of gods. And these guys got bored, and so they began to create, you know, this world for themselves, you know, in some ways something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they created the world. They created these bodies that they inhabited, and lo and behold, they began to forget their true selves. And so, you know, you got Hubbard then, who's rediscovered their true selves, and they have a word for what they call themselves, you know, their true self.
Yep, Thetan.
A Thetan.
Like from the Greek alphabet Theta.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And from what I understand, that's exactly where it was taken from.
That kind of sounds a little Eastern-ish.
Well, that's interesting about it is when you start to look at what they believe, they have borrowed... Hubbard has borrowed from Confucianism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, Judaism, Gnosticism, and Christianity.
Interesting. Yeah, because the moment you said we forgot that we were gods, I'm like, that kind of sounds like Hinduism and Buddhism. Because the whole problem, according to those two world religions, is, well, our problem is ignorance, right? And
exactly.
We need to kind of recognize, realize who we really are, that we're gods.
Well, interestingly enough, they believe in reincarnation as well. And so they believe then with each of these reincarnations that you have like this leftover stuff. I apologize. I'm not well versed in all of their terminology. But they have this idea that you have these beliefs or these...
it's like past hang-ups, like hurts.
Yeah,
that's
a good way of putting it.
Yeah. That we're attached to. I actually went to Church of Scientology and I got audited. They call their process of trying to discern what hang-ups you have
by auditing.
Right,
and so
right.
A person will ask you questions.
And these hang-ups, by the way, they call them engrams.
Engrams. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And they ask you to hold on to, it's like an engram meter or something like that. And it's essentially like a metal cylinder, and you hold on to it with your hand, and it...
So did you do this?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I had quite a good time there. And they... So I held on to it, then they asked me questions, and it reacts to pressure. So it's almost like a lie detector in a sense, right? If I have some sort of a recessed memory that's attached mm-hmm. to, say, my dad. Mm-hmm. And they ask me about my dad. I'll grip it because I feel stress. And then mm-hmm. it'll go up and they'll say, there you go. And then
there's an engram we got to get rid of.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of deprogramming and like deconstruction and then building back up.
Which is referred to as auditing. And now, so what you then do mm-hmm. is you pay money mm-hmm. to audit to help you get rid of this engram, which will help you to get more clarity of who you really are, mm-hmm. your God state. And this is where it's a very lucrative religion mm-hmm. Because this auditing process can cost you upwards of $100,000 to $400,000.
Oh, wow.
We're not talking cheap auditing. We're talking very expensive auditing. Yeah. And there's a lot of auditing, obviously, that's going to need to take place for you to peel back all the layers to get back to your original God self.
Can I just go visit my counselor and pay her $120 and deal with my daddy issues?
Well, but Steve, though, that won't allow you to reach the state of clear.
Ah.
And
they call it.
This is the end game. It's sort of like, this is, in the sense, this is like Buddhism, mm-hmm. in a sense, right? Is you're trying to get to that state that's free from all.
Like nirvana.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of thing,
right.
Yeah. Hmm. And they call it clear. Yeah.
So your ultimate end game then is to get back to that original God self, and hopefully you don't get bored again.
What do they call
back
it?
Back into this.
The operational faith.
Yeah. Now, in the mix of all of this, mm-hmm. You got Hubbard, who is a controversial character.
Was he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, his life is full of, you know, indiscrepancies. Like, you know, he claims to have done many different things. And in many ways, they kind of look at him as a god. Like, he's this superhuman.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he's their prophet.
Yeah. I mean, this guy, you know, they have all these different stories of him traveling the world or mm-hmm. going to this university or that. And so it's interesting when, you know, because a lot of this is really controversial because there's not evidence that it's true, right? Mm-hmm. These different things. But, you know, they kind of build him up so that he's more than just a science fiction writer. Mm-hmm. And they have some sort of credibility to think, okay, this guy, you know, has actually tapped into the fact that we are these gods, you know. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, if you've ever seen or read the book by Edgar Rice Burroughs, The Princess of Mars, I believe it is, Disney made it into a movie that actually lost the most amount of money of any movie of all time.
Interesting. Speaking of bad movies.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm forgetting the John.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Somebody's going to need to Google that. It's going to kill me.
I saw this movie. And
I love this movie.
You liked it?
I loved it, man.
Oh, man. But
I love Edgar Rice Burroughs. Well, at any rate, they have these gods that are very similar to these Thetans in that book. And in many ways, Edgar Rice Burroughs is like the father of science fiction writing.
John Carter.
So it's almost like Hubbard basically gave a backstory to these gods that Edgar Rice Burroughs had thought up years before.
Wow, that's really interesting. Because it's interesting when you talk to them about science fiction. When I was at the Church of Scientology, they were not, because I asked them about that, and I wasn't trying to mock or anything. I just said, well, so what's the deal with this kind of seeming science fiction-y and it being its prophet is a science fiction writer? What's the connection there? They're like, no connection. He's basically a prophet who happened to write science fiction, but it's in no way correlated, which, I mean, could very well be true, but
yeah,
it's just very, it's interesting.
Sure sounds science fiction-y.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's, this kind of leads into the topic that we want to talk about today. And,
right.
And we're in the subject of world religions. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, one of those new, we call it a new religious movement or a cult. This is one of the newest ones. It's very popular, by the way. I mean, they alleged to have 3,000 churches around the world. Mm. They've got 8 million people. They're in 100 countries and 30 languages.
Big, hey?
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
It's pretty impressive. Well, and it's one of those movements, I think, that's appealing in a sense because it purports to be able to set you free from your surroundings. And part of that, like, they don't, it's not quite, you know, you're going to get rich and whatever, but it enables you to get rid of some of the hangups that's going to stand in between you and being able to, you know, get to where you want to be in life, sort mm-hmm. of thing. So it's appealing to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And it raises the granddaddy of all questions that we always ask about every religion. And that is, you know, we would ask of Hubbard as we would ask of Buddha or Muhammad. How do you know that? Mm. How did you come to discover that you're a Thetan? Mm-hmm. That you are in fact a god that was bored and decided to create this world and have forgotten your true self. How is it that you came to understand that? And why should I believe you? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is one of the questions that we talk about. I mean, this is one of the problems of religion, right? I mean, when we'll ask about that common question, do all religions lead to God? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions I often ask people is, well, what if I made up a religion? Mm-hmm. Does it now lead to God? I mean, do all religions lead to God? I mean, because clearly Hubbard has made up a religion, you know? And so here he's made this up. Does that all of a sudden suddenly make it true? Or, mm-hmm. or what if I, you know, in my science fiction misgivings, what if I decide to create my own story? Would it suddenly become true? Now, this is kind of interesting, by the way, with Scientology, is they try to hold to this idea that, you know, truth is whatever you believe it is, or mm-hmm. God is whatever you believe God to be. They try to be, they try not to be exclusive.
It's mm-hmm. very Oprah-y.
Yeah, it's very Oprah-y. It's very inclusive terminology. The problem is, though, is at the end of the day, Hubbard's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. They're making an absolute claim then.
Right? Well, exactly. And I mean, I think the best way to put it is that story that I think I've told before of the Buddhist monk that I had a conversation with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Pure Land Buddhist.
Yeah, and monk, I asked him about his theology with regards to hungry ghost, if it's mm-hmm. metaphorical or literal, because many Buddhists believe it's literal. Mm-hmm. So I said, do you think you're right and they're wrong? I mean, or do you think you're both right? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I think one of us is right and one of us is wrong. He mm-hmm. goes, I just think that they're practicing my form of Buddhism in ignorance. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, I think he's dead right mm-hmm. in that's the way every religion views of every other religion.
Right.
Right. If you're trying to be inclusive, ultimately what a Scientologist is going to say is, oh, you know, Chris, you know, you're a Scientologist as well. I mean, you know, you're just misguided. You don't have the mm-hmm. full truth.
Yeah, just calling it a different name.
Yeah, and you're trying to, you know, figure out your Thetanism, right, through mm-hmm. Christianity.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of Hindu friends who would do something like that, right, because they're so inclusive. But at the end of the day, what they'll tell you is that, well, the world is really how Hinduism describes it, right? You just don't know it. Like,
yeah.
Once you get to a certain point where you're beyond Christianity, you will see the world through
Christianity's a lesser Hinduism.
Yeah,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, you just haven't worked your way far enough up.
Because we hold on to tenets like exclusivity and things right. of that nature.
Truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of creating a religion, last week as I was teaching one of Andy's classes on world religions, one of the exercises that we did was create your own religion and let's talk about it, right?
Sounds fun.
And one group actually in the back came up with a cult where they worship Beyonce. Turns out...
Beyonce?
Yeah. Turns out it's a real thing. They didn't know it at the time, but in Atlanta, there is actually a group
Are
called...
Are you kidding me?
The National Church
cult?
Of... Yeah.
Okay, sorry. What's the church name?
The National Church of B.
A B?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what they call it, right? I think it's B-E-Y. I'm not sure if they pronounce it Bay or B. But anyway, and I actually...
You know, there's certain moments in time where my fear for the human race spikes, you know, and I just become concerned for humanity.
Is this would this be one such moment, Andy?
This would be one of those moments.
Go seriously. Like I went onto their website and it's hilarious. They have an introductory video, right, where they call Beyonce their goddess, kind of a thing. But at the end of the day, it all came down to.
Now, did you notice? Was Chris Battle on that roster?
Let's moving on.
But the point of the exercise was this. I asked them, can you create a religion that doesn't make any claims whatsoever about the world? And there was actually...
No truth claims.
Yeah, no truth claims, right? And so there was one group, actually, that... it was interesting. When I asked them, okay, what's your religion? They didn't say anything. They were silent. And we were waiting. Okay. And so what they were saying is, well...
That's the only way.
Exactly. We're a religion that doesn't make any claims, so we're not going to say anything.
Clever.
Right? And so I'm like, at least that's consistent, right? There was another group that called themselves, Mormonism, but with like M-H-O-R. And I'm like, really? Okay. So what's your deal? And they say, oh, we go around just asking questions. We're just learning. I'm like, oh, okay. That sounds good.
It'd be very Socrates would be very pleased.
Yeah, but then I pushed them a little bit more. Well, why are you trying to learn from people? Well, because we think knowledge is a virtue. Oh, okay. Uh-oh. So you're making a claim there. Right?
There we go. Disqualified.
So, ding ding ding.
Yeah. At the end of the day, so basically the point was every religion makes a claim of some sort about the way the world actually is, and. Another thing we talked about was the whole correspondence theory, how there's reality or truth maker, and then there is your beliefs or your thoughts or propositions, right? Truth bearers. And if the truth bearer doesn't match with the truth maker, if your thoughts don't match the reality, yeah, then...
The way the world really is.
Yeah, then it's obviously false, and you're not going to be able to change the truth maker by coming up with whatever in the truth bearer. Right.
So this gets back then to the question we started with. If every religion is making a claim on reality, a truth claim, then the question becomes, how do you know that?
Right.
How do you know that you're right? Mm-hmm. Why should I believe you?
And see, this is the disturbing part. I know for myself, trying to discover a divine, if you will, what that is, because they often will look good. They sound good to me sometimes, right?
Like, well, they often play off of what we want to be the case.
Exactly. So I
am a God. That sounds, you're right.
Oh, I can be.
I've been trying to tell my wife that for years. She just won't believe me.
You have been justified. But because, you know, or the whole inclusive thing, let's all just get along and not have to worry about any sort of moral duties or anything like that. Sometimes, even though I push back against that naturally because I don't want chaos, at the same time, it's like, oh, you know, then I don't have to worry about getting in awkward conversations, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Now let's, with the time that we got, I'm sure people that are listening are thinking to themselves, well... Yeah, I agree with you, Andy, but Christianity falls into that same problem, doesn't it? Yeah. And the answer to that is yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We do make claims.
We are making truth claims, and so we have the burden of proof. Mm-hmm. How do we know that? Jesus, were you telling the truth? How do I know Jesus was telling the truth? And this is what I want to ask of every person, whether they be Joseph Smith, Muhammad, or Ron Hubbard, or Jesus Christ. Why should I believe you?
Right.
So let's just bat that around for a moment. Why should I believe Jesus Christ is telling the truth?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed is that of all of these religions, their core claim, I find, is unverifiable, really, right? Like, let's say the Buddha has somehow tapped into the mystery of the world, and he has seen the world as it really is, and now he's passing on that teaching. Mm-hmm. But you might have noticed that this is his subjective experience that I have no access to. And I don't know if he's telling the truth. And I would say the same thing about Muhammad. Right?
You made a word there that's important. Somehow. Mm-hmm. He somehow tapped into reality.
Was able to transcend everything or the reality around him and was able to, as you said, tap into something that no one else could.
See, and it gets interesting, right? Because Buddhists believe that this world, just some Buddhists, that it's all Maya, right? It's all illusion.
Yeah, all illusion, yeah.
But yet somehow you've come to get out of the illusion. Mm-hmm. I want to know how that is.
Yeah.
How do you know that it's not... Scientism, by the way, has the same problem. Scientism would ultimately...
Not to be confused with Scientology.
No, right. Like naturalism.
Scientism is the belief that you know, you can figure out the world basically with science, natural sciences alone.
And they believe that this world's just an illusion as well, which Thomas Nagel raises the question, well, how is it that you've gotten outside the illusion, mm-hmm. that you've transcended the particles that you're made up, and you've determined what the truth is? This, to me, is a huge problem.
Yeah.
How is it, and this gets back to the whole we've talked about before, is this idea that we're blind. We're born spiritually blind. Mm-hmm. How is it that we gain sight? Now, this is where I find Jesus Christ quite compelling. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I love about being a Christian is Jesus didn't come into the world claiming to be blind and having been given sight or having found sight, mm-hmm. or figured things out. Jesus came into the world saying that he
is sight.
He is sight, yeah. That he didn't find truth, he is truth.
Yeah.
That is a huge difference. Mm-hmm. However, as much as I love it, and I do love it, I still have to ask the question,
why should I believe you?
Yeah, why should I believe you? I am very thankful that you are claiming to be truth, because that's consistent philosophically, but I still have to ask the question, is it true that you are truth?
Yeah. And this is where I think a lot of people like to just fall back on a sort of Soren Kierkegaard's idea of the blind faith, or the mm-hmm. the leap, right? The leap of faith. And right. And this is what I love about Christianity when I first became a believer, is not having to do that. Mm-hmm. Because I always, from the outside looking in, thought that blind faith was not very appealing.
Yeah, that's because it's not appealing. Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally.
Yeah, I mean, if Christianity was about blind faith, I'm out. Yeah. Mm. Peace out.
Oh, by the way, just a quick, interjection is, I guess, quick. Just to interject here, I was listening to the lecture on modern philosophy by Ron Nash from Reformed Theological Seminary, and he was actually teaching on Soren Kierkegaard, and he said, actually, the whole thing about the leap of faith, people actually misunderstand. The typical understanding is really that it's a blind leap in the dark, right? But the leap that Soren Kierkegaard is talking about is more like just a hop.
Okay.
Right? It's not like you're really throwing yourself out there, but there are moments when you have to just kind of suspend your beliefs for a bit just to kind of get grounded again.
Well, I mean, if you take that idea of taking a step of faith, mm-hmm. right? People don't take blind steps without mm-hmm. any evidence that there's something going to ground them. I just don't take a step off of a bridge or a cliff.
Mm-hmm. Right? See Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I would even use that Indiana Jones. He still had good reason to believe leading up to that point that if he took a step, mm-hmm. that there was going to be something.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't just this blind mm-hmm. jump. And so Christianity, this is why I stress a lot the definition of faith in Christianity, and that is trusting what we have good reason to believe is true. So what good reason then do we have to believe that Christianity is true and that Jesus was telling the truth? Now, there's a couple things that in the limited time that we have here that I think just needs to get mentioned. And one of them is Jesus claimed to be the truth. He claimed to be God. Mm-hmm. But he did more than that. If that's all he did, I wouldn't be a Christian. But Jesus went beyond that, and that is he demonstrated that he is who he was claiming to be. Mm-hmm. And he did that in every conceivable way that I could imagine. I can't imagine a way that he didn't do it. So, for example, he demonstrated that he had power over the physical world. Mm-hmm. He demonstrated that he had power over the spiritual world. He demonstrated that he had power even over life and death itself. Mm-hmm. And this is the big one for Christianity, and that is that mm-hmm. he defeated death. If somebody's telling you the truth, that they're a god, well, then they should be able to behave like a god mm-hmm. and be able to do God things. And that's exactly what Jesus was able to do and exactly what he did do. He was able to demonstrate power that only God would have. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest ones being, there's no smoke and mirrors with dying on a cross mm-hmm. and coming back to life 3 days later.
Yeah, contrary to what people talk about with, you know, the so-called swoon theory and things like that. I mean,
now I've stressed this before, and I need to stress it again. Now, we're not talking that he just came back and he resuscitated and he's alive again. No. When the disciples saw him, they saw a man who had not just come back to life, a man who had defeated death. Mm-hmm. He would not die again. He was walking, talking, eternal life. This changed their lives because they saw that he was who he had been claiming to be all along. Mm-hmm. And the story that he had told them, the reality that he had told them, that this is a broken world full of sin and mm-hmm. evil, and that he had come to defeat evil on our behalf, that we could fulfill the purpose that we were created for, not that we're gods, but that we were created for a relationship with God, mm-hmm. and that it required his sacrifice, his obedience unto death to accomplish that purpose, that we could be brought back into right relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And he demonstrated that what he was talking about reality was in fact true.
Mm-hmm. This is why the second half, if you will, of the Easter story of our Easter weekend, when we celebrate Easter Sunday, is so important, right? When we say that he is risen indeed. And this is exciting for us because mm-hmm. he didn't remain in the grave. He's not on his cross. He's reigning in our lives because his kingdom.
And you've mentioned this before, Chris. Christians don't, we have no place that we go to mourn.
No, no.
We only have one place, actually, that we remember the death of Christ.
Yeah, and that's the Lord's Supper. When we talk about him shedding his blood and his body, that was the institute that he gave us in order to remember his death, right? But mm-hmm. also to celebrate what it was able to do effectively in the world.
And that he's in no grave.
Exactly. No grave at all.
Exactly. And this is the beauty of Christianity. This is one of those things that I love about Christianity. And now it becomes more, though, than just that. And I we'll get more into this next time. And that is that Christ lives in me. And so when you hear the early church preaching, there are two things that they have on their lips as they preach continually to this world. And that was Jesus died, he rose again, he defeated death, and now he lives in me. And it has changed my life. Mm. And so when we get back next week, mm-hmm. We'll pick up on that, go deeper.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good note to end on. Now, if you're a skeptic listening in, you might have noticed that we're taking a lot of things for granted. It's like we're just assuming without arguing for whether these miracles are true and things like that. We'll discuss all of that. Especially when we get to session 5, is there a life after death as we discuss Jesus' resurrection further? But for now,
I think it might be also helpful as we're closing this, too, just to say, if you want more information on this, I wrote a book that came out in March. It's part of the course and part of mm-hmm. the series that we're talking about right now. I'd encourage you to go to apologeticscanada.com. You can purchase a book or on Amazon. And in which it goes into much more depth.
Right, and the book is called Thinking, Answering Life's 5 Biggest Questions. So check that out. But for now, we'll bid you adieu. Thank you for joining us. Chris is just kind of smirking at me because I threw in a little bit of French.
Some bon français.
Why don't you end with a little Korean, buddy?
다음 주에 뵙도록 하겠습니다. We'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us, the Apologetics Canada podcast has been administered of Apologetics Canada. Ciao for now.